Thank you very much, sir. May it please the court and counsel.
Your Honor, on November 10, 2015, my client, Mr. Lamar Brown, was arrested in Charlottesville. 2 to 3 days prior to this arrest, the government presented evidence that my client was texting back and forth to their informant. The text messages never stated drugs, but the text messages included numbers. One of the numbers, and the biggest number that was on the message, was the number 15. My client goes, he's no evidence that he is a drug dealer at this point. He goes to the location to purchase marijuana. There's no informant there. The police are there. They arrest him, and they charge him with attempting to purchase over 5 pounds of marijuana. There is no evidence whatsoever to show that my client actually was attempting to buy more than 5 pounds of marijuana. In fact, the number on the text messages, it was 15. My client owned a food truck business that the government has verified, and it's actually in the affidavit, so he's in the cash business. He shows up with $1,500 in one pocket and about $3,000 in the other pocket, and he told the officers, I came to purchase $1,500 worth of marijuana. If anything, that matches the 15 in the text messages. The officer says, based on his training and experience, but what he does is say, well, it's almost $5,000, so therefore he was there to buy $5,000 worth of marijuana, so we're going to charge him with that. It's pure speculation. And what they then do at that point is they get a search warrant, and this is in Charlottesville. They then get a search warrant to search his home in Albemarle County. The affidavit that they submit to get the search warrant had 5 facts. The detective, the affiant stated, number one, he was Detective Mark Frazier for the Charlottesville Police Department. Mr. Brown is arrested for attempting to purchase more than five pounds worth of marijuana. He's found with about $5,000 and a firearm in his vehicle. And his wife is registered to the car. That has nothing to do with his home in Albemarle County. The second thing that they put in the affidavit is that on November 4, which is 6 days prior, that Mr. Brown reported an assault and attempt robbery at his residence. It was fleshed out during the trial that that's false. What was fleshed out in the trial was that he parks his food truck on the street where he lives. There are several houses on that street. He comes home one day, sees an individual near his truck. He goes down there. His wife is looking out of the window and sees him and this individual. It's not at his house. It's not in his house. It's not even in his yard. The individual then attempts to rob him out there. There was never an assault, but there's also no robbery.
It's, like it's either in his driveway or on the street, very close to his driveway, right?
It's about maybe 3 or 4 houses down. It's a huge truck. So he parks it on the public street, on the one where he lives, but nothing happened at his residence or even in his yard or even in the curtilage. The third thing that the affiant stated was that the State Corporation Commission has records indicating that he does, in fact, own Black Jack's Mobile Soul Food Kitchen, a food truck company, lawfully, and he often parks the food truck at his residence, along with the GMC Envoy. Again, nothing about any nexus toward a house in Albemarle County. The fourth thing that they allege is that a source has allegedly provided information that led to seizures and drug arrests in the past. Nothing to do with him. They're saying that the source is, I guess, reliable. Detective Frazier then says that the source said that he observed Mr. Brown possess multiple pounds of marijuana and large amounts of currency on more than 10 occasions during the preceding 45 days. That's it. We don't know if this is in Houston, Texas. We don't know if this is in Louisiana. We don't know if this is in Kansas. There's nothing else presented.
Am I correct here that he was arrested with a lot of 5 pounds of marijuana prior to the search warrant?
No. He was there to, according to the government, he shows up with $1,500 in one pocket and about $3,000 or so in the other pocket. He's there to purchase.
Attempting to purchase.
Right. He's there to purchase. This is the only case that you're going to find where the person is, where this happens to someone who's not selling, they're buying drugs. So he didn't show up with any drug. There are no drugs anywhere.
But he was arrested for being involved in drug distribution. But
no, he was arrested for buying, selling,
whichever.
Well, he was there to purchase $1,500 worth of marijuana.
Okay.
Right? Well, he says he's a user. What the officers say is, well, you have a total of about $5,000 in your pocket. So based on my training and experience, you're a dealer. That's where they get the dealer from.
Have an informant who Detective McKay, who's got 25 years of experience as an officer and 14 years of doing drug interdiction in this general vicinity area, right? And he says, I know this informant. He's known to me. He's helped me before. And he's telling me that he has seen this Mr. Brown with drugs and currency at least, or actually more than 10 times, as I think, in the last 45 days. So we have the Sauer case from this court that says if you have information about an individual perhaps dealing drugs, then there is the residence is something, there's a nexus there. And so why, if you have all of this, is this at least not enough of at least enough indicia of probable cause so that the officer could rely on it? It's a lot more than just a bare bones affidavit or search warrant here, isn't it?
I disagree 100%. And the difference.
Well, why?
In Sauer, the individual has a traffic stop. He's found with a usable amount of, I believe it's marijuana, in the car. What the officer interviews the individual, and he also, I think, he has like over $900 worth, $1,200 worth of currency. The officer, who is also the affiant, interviews the person, and the person says, "Hey, I'm not a user." And the officer puts it in the affidavit, and the only thing that you can deduce from that is you are a dealer, which is fair. It makes sense. Then what the person says is, before you stopped me, I had just come from my residence. And so what the court says is there is no nexus to have issued the warrant because there's no probable cause. However, they apply the good faith exception from Leon, and they say even though there's no nexus for the probable cause to have issued it, good faith, let's take a look at the third prong to see if an officer could have objectively relied on it. And they say, well, and for that standard, you only have to have some nexus.
Sauer's is a case involving possession, not distribution or possession
right.
of intent. And the court in Sauer's, and I happen to have some familiarity with that case because it came out of Lynchburg.
Good.
But in that case, the court just said, hey, this is simple possession. You can't make an inference that a person in possession of drugs in a car possessed at home. But it recognizes the holding in Gwynn, that a magistrate can reasonably infer the probability that drugs or drug paraphernalia or records or other evidence of Gwynn's suspected drug-related activity would be found at his residence.
I don't disagree with that.
Well, here we have, don't we have at least probable cause that he's involved in drug distribution in the affidavit?
You have it for the good faith exception, but the case Sauer says there's no nexus, it shouldn't have been issued, but they then rely on good faith, and what they
but,
say...
But Sauer's only deals where there's only probable cause to believe he's in possession.
Your Honor, it says, accordingly, we conclude the totality of the circumstances presented in the affidavit did not provide a substantial basis to conclude the warrant would uncover evidence of wrongdoing. So they say there's not probable cause to have issued it, but then they go to, well, does it qualify for good faith?
And but Gwynn is a case where the defendant is, there's probable cause that he's involved in drug distribution. And when there's probable cause of drug distribution, Gwynn says it's reasonable for the magistrate to infer that evidence will be found at his residence.
I don't disagree with that. As long as you are able to corroborate it, as opposed to simply saying, an unidentified or a confidential informant simply says, hey, The only drug dealing, anything you have in my client's case is you have a source who says, I've seen him with pounds of marijuana and a lot of money within the last 45 days. You steal all of the cases, whether it's Illinois v. Gates, every case that's cited between both myself and the government, we've cited about 13 to 14 cases. Every single case, it says that you still have to have more than bare bones. You simply can't make allegations. You can't make conclusions. You can't simply institute your beliefs. It says that the police have to do an independent investigation. They have to bring independent facts, and they have to corroborate what the source is saying. In this case, they corroborated none of it. There's no information in my case. And in Sauer, they did corroborate it because in the affidavit, you have the officer stating the individual says, I am a drug dealer. You have the individual who also then says the nexus to the home for good faith. He says, before you stop me, I just come from my residence. So Sauer says, well, an officer could objectively believe from that warrant that there could be drugs at the residence based on those two corroborating things. My case is different because you have nothing corroborating anything that was put in the affidavit.
Now, before the search was executed, his arrest, but before the search was executed, didn't the defendant tell the police, while he denied having any drugs there at the time, didn't he tell them, give the police several locations in his house where he'd previously stored drugs, including the safe, and that there might be some documents and where some cash could be found as well?
I will point out two things. None of that was presented to the magistrate.
Wait. It wasn't in the affidavit. Did he tell them that?
No, he didn't. And what he said, what was flushed out in trial, is they say, well, if you did have drugs, where would you hide them? And then he says, well, I would hide it here. I would hide it there. But I would tell the court that.
So the record doesn't reflect in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth that he told the police that he previously had drugs stored in locations within his house?
If the question is he guilty of possession with intent for the 400 grams that were found in his home, yes, you can use that absolutely. But with respect to whether or not, one, the affidavit should have been issued, and whether or not, if the answer is no to that, then whether or not the good faith exception applies, none of that happens. None of that is relevant because that happened over 2 to 3 hours after the arrest, and they had already gotten a warrant and been inside of his home. So all of the cases...
The search hadn't been executed at the time he makes those statements to the police.
Yes, it actually had because it was a different officer who was interviewing him. Detective McKay went down and got the warrant, and they actually were waiting there at the house for the warrant. He was taken, he had gotten arrested, but they got the warrant before they even got any of those statements, and that's why it's not in...
Got the warrant and executing the search are two different things.
They got the warrant, they executed the search, they didn't have those statements at the time. The minute that he got arrested, they already had someone posted at his home already. So the minute he got arrested, they said it's coming because they had someone at the house waiting to make sure no one else went in and out of the home. So they got the warrant, they executed it. They didn't have those statements yet. The statements came much later once he's at the police station and he had finally been Mirandized, then they interview him. And the reason why it came out in trial, because he's also charged with possession with intent to distribute the drugs that were found in the home.
But the affidavit for the warrant did say, Source A advised Detective Frazier that he/she has observed Lamar Brown in possession of multiple pounds of marijuana and large amounts of U.S. currency on more than 10 occasions in the last 45 days. So why doesn't that indicate that there is more than just possession here? That at least a bare bones, more than a bare bones indication that drug dealing may going on and therefore there's a nexus with the residence.
Kolaw v. Commonwealth. Reliable source says there will be a house party and they give the residence. They said, at this house party, people are going to be using and they're going to be selling drugs. So you have the allegation. That's no different than what the court just said with respect to Mr. Brown. You have a reliable informant who says, I've seen him with a lot of drugs. I've seen him with a lot of money. Therefore, he's a drug dealer. Same thing in Kolaw. The court says, not only is there no nexus to have issued it, they then go into the good faith language and they say, no, it doesn't meet the third prong. And the reason why is the same in Brown. You have to independently corroborate what the informant has told you. Otherwise, to breach the sanctity of someone's home, you simply have to have a reliable informant. You could have, whether you've used the informant once or 1,000 times. All you have to have is a reliable informant, allege you're a drug dealer, then we get to go get a warrant for your home. And that's what the government is asking the court to do in this case.
Your time has expired, but we've had a lot of questions for you, so I'm going to give you 3 minutes of rebuttal.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Morning, Ms. Campbell.
Good morning, Your Honors. Lauren Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth in this case. The trial court properly denied the defendant's motion to suppress because the search warrant was supported by probable cause. The affidavit for the search warrant contains sufficient evidence to show that the defendant was engaged in illegal drug distribution and that items the police sought would be found at his residence. The affidavit established that the defendant had recently just tried to purchase 5 pounds of marijuana, had over $5,000 worth of cash on him, and a firearm. The affidavit also had evidence that in the previous 45 days prior to this, someone known to the police officers had seen the defendant with pounds of marijuana and large amounts of cash. Those facts then support the officer, the affiant, statement that based on his information and experience, having pounds of marijuana in that short of a period of time is not indicative of possession or use, but is indicative of drug distribution. While evidence of a single drug transaction does not in itself raise the inference that a suspect will have drug paraphernalia at their house, evidence of ongoing drug distribution does give the inference that drugs are likely to be found in the house. Likewise, drugs, paraphernalia, scales, and the other items that were specifically sought in the search warrant. Therefore, an affidavit, such as the one in this case, that establishes that a defendant is a drug distributor, is sufficient to support a warrant of the defendant's residence. Obviously, the police officers have to assert how they know this is the residence and tie it to the defendant, which they did in this case, by showing information that they knew this was his address, based on seeing his cars there, based on prior police records, based on the State Corporation Commission listing it as his residence. So clearly, the affidavit established a nexus between the defendant, his criminal drug distribution, and his residence.
Talk to us a little bit about the attempted robbery and Mr. Laster's argument that, well, even though that was only, I think, six days before this arrest, so it's very close in time, it was more related to the food truck. It wasn't really at his house because he parked the food truck several houses down the street.
Certainly, Your Honor. I think in this case the officer did an abundant job of including as much information as he had collected against a defendant he appears to have known well from a lengthy history with him. While certainly that robbery, based on the officer's experience, he stated in his affidavit what he thought it could mean. Certainly, there are potentially plausible innocent explanations. However, that doesn't undercut the totality of the circumstances when we're looking at whether or not this affidavit supported probable cause.
So you're saying if you extract the home robbery from the affidavit, it still doesn't eliminate probable cause?
Absolutely, Your Honor. If you take that out, you still have all the other specific facts in it, as well as the officer's own experience, which he includes in the affidavit.
The wife's vehicle that he's driving, and that's registered through DMV at that home residence. But there's no drugs in the car till he purchases them, right?
Certainly, Your Honor, and that is just trying to establish that is his address, and that is why the officers are going to search that address. There's cases that both the defendant and I have cited that the defendant is trying to use to show that this is a bare-bones affidavit, but it's not. It's not a case where they just asserted this is the address and they're going to go search it. No, they explained why they believe it's his residence. That is why they're going to go search it. The affidavit explained why they believe he is a drug dealer. And therefore, when you put those two things together, that the affidavit showed probable cause that he distributed drugs and that the officers were able to tie him to the house, that provides the necessary nexus. Crow law is distinguishable from this case, where it does have an informant. It's the informant is talking about future activities that he thinks he's that are going to happen, and this court found that that just was not sufficient. That it was not backed up by any other assertion that this defendant in that case was a drug dealer. Again, we have specific facts to support that he is a drug dealer.
In that case, was the informant known to the affiant?
I believe that in that case, the informant was known to the affiant.
So it's the same as here in that
case. It's similar to that case in here, except that, again, the informant in that case hadn't actually seen anything happen and didn't explain how he knew that there was going to be a party, which this court also relied upon, whereas the informant in this case specifically said, I saw him with large pounds of marijuana and cash more than 10 times in the last 45 days. So that's strikingly different than COLA. Again, the Commonwealth has asserted that this affidavit was clearly not bare bones. It asserted that he was distributing drugs, provided multiple factual bases, including the arrest for trying to purchase over 5 pounds. So both the informant and the police's own encounters supported the affidavit, and the warrant clearly had indiciable probable cause. Therefore, unless this court has any further questions, the Commonwealth would ask that you affirm. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Campbell. And you have your full rebuttal time.
Thank you. Your Honor, what the government is missing in this case is simply this. If I sit right here and I stack 50 pounds of marijuana right here, and if I had $50,000 cash right here, officer says, I've been an officer for 25 years based on my training and experience, you're a dealer. I can't argue with that.
Why then, if you take those facts, wouldn't your residence be a natural nexus to some of your alleged distribution activities in terms of where you store it? I can understand some employer, a locker you may have at a gym or an employer, why you've got to have a nexus to that. But why isn't your home then a natural nexus to your distribution activities?
Because no case says that. No case says, what you're basically saying is, all you've got to do is establish with facts, because you're seeing the money, you're seeing the 50 pounds factual. What you're saying is that as long as you can show that the person is a dealer, then you can get a warrant for his house. The case law doesn't say that. The case law says that you still must have, even after you've established that the person is a dealer, you still have to provide a nexus to the home. You can't go to my house without something, me saying, hey, and by the way, I just left my house and came straight here, and then I pulled it all out. Then the court says, all you need is some nexus, even if it's a tiny bit, but you still have to have some connection to the resident. Every single case.
You say that no case says that.
No case says that.
Okay, let me read you from Gwynn versus Commonwealth, 1993. A magistrate is entitled to draw reasonable inferences about where incriminating evidence is likely to be found based on the nature of the evidence at the type of the offense. In the case of drug dealers, evidence of that ongoing criminal activity is likely to be found where the dealer resides. Thus, the magistrate reasonably could infer the probability that drugs or drug paraphernalia or records or other evidence of suspected drug-related activity would be found in his residence. Doesn't that say exactly what you say no case says?
The cases say that, but if you go on to read the case and you read the facts, there are facts in the case that still establish some connection to the home. The case does not say, you show I'm a dealer, you can go to my house. It doesn't say that. That case doesn't say it. None of the cases say it. Illinois v. Gates. The informant says, wife, husband, they're dealing drugs out of this house. This is how they do it. They go to the airport here. They go to the airport then. They bring the drugs. They do this. The government, had they gone and just said, okay, we have someone alleging it, they're drug dealers. Had the government gone directly to the magistrate and gotten a warrant, it wouldn't fly. What they had to do was go follow the husband, follow the wife. Yep, he caught this flight at 4 o'clock, just like the informant said. Yep, he arrived back at this time. Yep, he did this, just like the informant said. And then Illinois v. Gates says, the totality, you have the allegation, you have supported it by independent facts, by independent investigation to show that it's corroborated, your warrant, good faith, valid. And Gulo v. Lopez, same thing in that particular case. Three defendants, two of the defendants admitted they are dealers. They said the appellant, he is somebody dealing with us too. The police go follow him, see him going on three different occasions, including the day he was arrested. They see him go to a shopping center, make exchanges, and then come back and go to his house.
And they let you go over your rebuttal time, the additional rebuttal time I gave you. So can you wrap up quickly for us?
Wrapping up every single case, including that case, none of them say all you need to do is establish or allege the person is a drug dealer. You have to also provide independent facts. You have to corroborate the sources. And more importantly, most importantly, and they'll give you any connection, but you have to make a nexus to the home, or else you can go to my house because you see me with this. None of the cases say that.
Thank you, Mr. Laster. We will greet counsel, and then the next case on our docket is Daniel Avila versus Compton.